This episode is brought to you in part by Litvin School of Mission, Ministry, and Leadership at Wheaton College. Our graduate programs in evangelism, ministry, and leadership enrich your mind, spirit, vocation, and character to refine what's already within you. Learn more at wheaton.edu/CT.
You're listening to Quick to Listen. Each week we go beyond hashtags and hot takes to discuss a major cultural event. I'm Morgan Lee, Associate Digital Media Producer here at Christianity Today, and I'm joined by Mark Galley, our Editor-in-Chief, who just laughed at me when I told him that we should laugh on the show more.
No, I was laughing with you. I was laughing with you. I never laugh at you.
Unclear. Our listeners will not have audio of that to confirm.
I stand by my laugh.
Mark, what if I say I definitely laugh at you sometimes?
That's fine.
All right.
It's okay to laugh at old white males in this culture. That's perfectly appropriate.
All right. Well, I'm just fitting my generation stereotypes,
All right,
I guess.
Good.
Okay. Who's joining us today?
Joining us today is Marshall Shelley. He's the director of the Doctor of Ministry program at Denver Seminary and contributing editor of CT Pastors. Before that, he served Leadership Journal in many capacities, lastly as executive editor. He's the author of Well-Intentioned Dragons, Ministering to Problem People in Your Church, the general editor of the Quest Study Bible, co-author with Harold Myra of The Leadership Secrets of Billy Graham, and co-author with his father, church historian Bruce Shelley, of The Consumer Church, Can Evangelicals Win the World Without Losing Their Soul? Aside from the many journalism awards leadership received over the decades that Marshall served the publication, Marshall's most gracious decision was hiring an untested pastor from California who, under Marshall's mentoring, has not done all that badly in the world of journalism. And he is thankful to Marshall to this day. Welcome, Marshall.
Yes, well, I'm thankful that Mark Galley decided to shift from his church in Sacramento and join us on staff at Christianity Today. That was one of my my better, even if accidental, good decisions.
Well, I bring that up because I get a lot of letters from people, and if they praise me, I think they should recognize that you're the cause of my journalistic career. And if they curse me, they should write you as well.
I see where this is going. Yes. Okay.
You thought it was a compliment, and then you were less clear about that. Wow. So how many years does that mean you guys go back?
29. Just a couple days ago. Yeah.
That's right. Mark Galley and I were the part of the core of the Christianity Today softball team that waged its crusade for many years with actually some success, Mark. So that was great fun to do that
before we got too old to throw a softball more than across the diamond. Yeah,
probably Marshall will tell you to speak for yourself, Mark.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, Marshall always had a better arm than I did. That's for sure.
Well, there's a reason Mark and I are both interested in history is because we've lived enough of it that we can remember it.
Exactly.
All right, guys. Well, this is going to be a fun show, I'm sure. And I will not tell you how many months I was born after you guys met. It's okay. No need. All right. Last year, Willow Creek Community Church founder and lead pastor Bill Hybels announced he was passing the baton to two heirs and would be retiring in October 2018. A lot has changed in 10 months. Since that announcement, 10 women have accused Hybels of misconduct. Earlier this week, the New York Times reported that one of the leader's former assistants accused the Willow Creek founder of repeatedly groping her. And on Sunday, Steve Carter, whom Hybels had indicated would succeed him as teaching pastor, announced his resignation. All of this occurred several days before Willow's Global Leadership Summit, an annual event hosted at Willow's Barrington campus and streamed at hundreds of locations around the world. As CT, the Chicago Tribune, and now the New York Times have reported on allegations of sexual misconduct and complaints about the Willow Creek board's response, some less familiar with Willow Creek may wonder why this church deserves all this attention, seeing it as just another pastor sex scandal. Today on Quick to Listen, we'll explore just how many evangelical institutions and understandings of quote-unquote doing church Hybels truly affected. What is all that will be impacted by these revelations? And how will the American evangelical church be broadly affected? All right, so we have a lot to get into today, and I'm excited to kind of get into this history of the evangelical movement a little bit more closely. Before that, though, I want to remind everyone that you can now support the podcast in another way other than becoming a subscriber. And it's really cool. You can do that by going to morect.com/podcasts. And, you know, as Mark and I have talked about before, podcast isn't the only thing that we do here. at CT. In fact, I took a reporting trip recently.
Yeah, tell us about that, because I think that's very central to what we're about at CT.
So I had the chance to go to Washington, D.C. to cover something that the State Department was hosting called a Religious Freedom Ministerial, where they essentially brought together people who work for NGOs and nonprofits and other civil society actors, as well as leaders from countries around the world to try to educate them, equip them, resource them, and maybe encourage them on the issue of international religious freedom.
Yeah, that's a core concern of CT's and has been for decades. And I'm really glad we had an opportunity to be a part of that.
Yeah. So I did not necessarily go as civil society. I know sometimes you go as participants when you go to things, Mark. I got to go there as a journalist and write a couple different stories, including one on Uzbekistan and religious freedom, which is a country that is actually pretty similar in size to the country we covered last week on the podcast, Canada, even though I'm sure our listeners are far less familiar with Central Asia, but they've made a lot of strides when it comes to the area of religious freedom. And so that was one of the things that was spotlighted as part of this larger event that was going on.
Yeah, and I'd encourage listeners to be sure to check out Morgan's piece, I think, that preceded that, just telling the stories of some of the persecuted church across the world. They were very poignant.
Yeah,
very
because
powerful.
There were also a lot of people who had been persecuted for their faith who spoke as part of the event as well. Yeah, I got to write a couple stories out of it, and it was a really cool thing to go and cover. So if you would like to read my coverage, you can go to the news and reporting part of our website. And if you would like to support this podcast and our larger work at CT, you can do that by going to morect.com/podcast. morect.com/podcast. And we know some of you have already started giving, and we truly appreciate that. So thank you so much. All right, Mark, it's time for a gut check. And so, you know, many of us learned about this most recent news about Hybels through the New York Times on Sunday morning. And I would love to hear your 2 cents about that when you heard that news break.
Well, my initial reaction was, why did the New York Times have access to the story and we didn't? So it was journalistic jealousy, for one thing. Second, it put into more detail some of the problems that Bill has had at Willow Creek over the years. So I'm sorry, I've said this before in other stories. I'm a little old now to be too shocked and wonder if this is the last story we'll hear about this whole thing.
Yeah, I think I saw the headline. I was out all day on Sunday and I saw the headline and forwarded it to the news team, but didn't necessarily think that it was necessarily going to be different than some of these other allegations that have been made. I think part of this podcast, I would say, is a little bit for me and maybe some who have just kind of taken for granted all that Willow has done, but may not be super familiar. So I'm probably going to raise my hand a little bit when I see this as just like another pastor sex scandal. There are people who have really lionized Bill Hybels that I'm sure are having completely different types of emotional and spiritual reactions to what's going on. But it's hard for me to kind of muster up the outrage or even just grief, I think, that other people are feeling right now. So I'm excited that we're going to do the show today.
Yeah, me too. And Marshall is a perfect person to help us through it because Marshall was, the founding of Leadership and the founding of Willow are kind of coincided back in the day, no?
That's exactly right. I graduated from college in 1975, and that was the year that Bill Hybels started this new church, this experimental church in some ways called Willow Creek, meeting in a theater. And I remember my first job after college was in the Chicagoland area, and I heard stories about this new church at the Willow Creek Theater where people had to sit in the aisles and were actually sitting on stage because there was no other seating available, to hear this recent grad from Trinity College up in Deerfield come and speak. He'd been a youth pastor, but this is really his first pastorate, and it got a lot of attention right from the get-go.
Well, that's really going to be fascinating, considering both of these, you know, Christianity Today and Leadership Journal and Willow Creek are both Chicagoland-based institutions. So that type of anecdotal stuff sounds great, and I'm glad that you're going to be sharing that with us. I'm wondering if you can take us a little bit before Willow Creek became a thing. What did worship and outreach look like before Willow Creek launched?
Well, like Mark, I was raised in the church in the 50s and 60s, and I would say in the 50s and 60s, I would characterize it as churches felt very distinct from culture. You spoke a different language when you were in church than when you were in the larger culture. our music was different. You know, our vocabulary was different. We were talking about being saved. We were talking about being washed in the blood. We were talking about things that you just would not talk about in the larger culture. And, you know, our music was different. You know, we were singing choruses, but they were choruses by Ralph Carmichael or some of these others. In the Stars His Handiwork, I See, On the Wings He Speaks with Majesty. But these were the tunes, the music, the lyrics were not anything that would particularly communicate to anybody outside that church culture. So there's really a separation between church culture and the secular culture, and you know, different rules of behavior existed in the church. You know, there were certain sins that we sort of recognized everybody struggled with, but there were other sins that, you know, we got very exorcised about. And those were the sins that were highlighted during the sex, drugs, and rock and roll era of the 60s. And so, you know, I think those of us in the church sort of felt like we were marginalized. You know, we were very separate from the larger culture. That was sort of the context that was the socio-dynamic of what was going on when Bill Hybels came along and recognized that and said, boy, we got to do something about that. It's just not, you know, a church is not going to be able to effectively reach unchurched Harry and Mary if there's such a vast difference between our cultures and our language and our music and our ways of behaving. So that was part of it. I think he was a missionary at heart and really wanted to try to overcome that chasm between Christians and those who are not believers.
So I heard you mention a movie theater. Now, I know today many churches meet in movie theaters. I don't think that was the case.
That's exactly right. That was this was a new thing. Taking the gospel into secular turf was just unheard. You know, it just wasn't anything anybody had done. It was you know, as you say, today it's fairly common to, you know, meet in secular venues. But
and if you're not meeting in a bar, you're not really cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and yeah, nobody had tattoos then. You know, tattoos were seen as vandalizing the temple of the Holy Spirit that God has given you. So yeah, it was just a very different time.
All right. So movie theater aside, what else was Willow doing differently in a way that was kind of like catching the attention and imagination of other evangelical churches?
Well, they were doing some I would call them cosmetic or surface things. You know, they were doing contemporary music. They were doing, you know, they would bring the smoke machine in periodically. They would do drama. They were just more intentional about their communication. And I guess that's probably, you know, at root, that's probably the most significant thing that Willow Creek brought to the table, was that in the past, the church had figured if we proclaim the gospel the way we're comfortable proclaiming it one more time, that's called faithfulness. Willow Creek came along and said, no, faithfulness is measured by how well you are speaking the language of the people who you want to reach. Willow Creek had studied communication, and the communication 101 is communication is not what you say, it's what the listeners hear. Willow Creek really took that to heart and said, okay, how can we make sure that the people we're speaking to hear the gospel, not just we saying it in a way that we're comfortable saying it one more time? And so they took a very strategic approach to church life, which was brand new. In a lot of ways, it was brand new. I don't think necessarily Willow Creek was the first to do it, but they were really the first to do it effectively and in a way that that drew notice. They let the audience determine the effectiveness of the messaging. You know, they would ask questions like, is our message working? And, you know, that just wasn't a question that was asked in the 50s and 60s. Are people capable of understanding what we are trying to say? What are the obstacles? What are we unintentionally doing that is an obstacle to the gospel being heard and understood? So, you know, for instance, they made use of surveys. They went around and asked people in the neighborhood around the church, what do you think about the church? What are some of the reasons you don't go? What do you consider some of the things that you know might be interested in if the church offered? And so they allowed the audience to help shape the form and the format of their services and their ministries.
They also worked really hard at taking down any barriers that would be perceived as religious to a secular audience. I don't know if it's still true, but for years they never had a cross hanging in the sanctuary. Their sanctuary looked like an auditorium. They wanted people to feel comfortable there. The phrase that sums up the whole enterprise would be called user-friendly, what we call user-friendly.
Yeah, they didn't want anything to that they would have to explain, if at all possible. And so religious symbolism was absent, as Mark mentioned. The crosses was not visible, and that, of course, was a controversial thing for a lot of Christians who felt that the cross is really at the center of what the church is about. But Willow Creek said, no, let's not confuse people with symbols they may not understand until they have... They've heard the gospel in a voice and in a format and in language that is familiar to them.
This is more than a sociological phenomenon, because I was a Presbyterian pastor who was offended by them not having a cross and not being overboard about user-friendly. So when I came to visit the offices of Christianity Today to interview for the job that Marshall eventually hired me for, I deliberately went to Willow Creek to... frankly, to go there and criticize it mentally as I was participating in worship. But I was, lo and behold, if I didn't feel that the Lord spoke to me through the sermon that morning, something really concrete and direct that I could not mistake for anything but a word from the Lord. So I do think beyond the sociological surface elements of what we're talking about here, I do believe God was using the church in ways that went way deeper than that.
In a way, Willow Creek was revolutionary in that previously, churches, I think, assumed that all that was needed to reach unbelievers with the gospel was simply to say it one more time, and not do anything particularly different, but just proclaim the words, say the words that were familiar to religious people to irreligious people, and expect them to respond. I think Willow Creek were some of the first to realize that our culture has fundamentally shifted to a It is spiritually blind and is not going to respond positively to a message that has grown perhaps either overly familiar or has grown stale. And Willow Creek said, no, we need to communicate in language that is going to get people's attention and be able to say it not the way we've said it, thousands of times before, but say it in a way that they've never heard it before. And that was just a different way of thinking about what a church's mission was. It elevated creativity. It elevated, innovation and things that today we sort of take for granted. Freshness is a virtue today, but it was considered novelty back in the 70s. And until, my experience was similar to Mark, until I actually attended and said, wow, they are preaching the gospel, but boy, they're doing it in a way I'd never heard before, but it's powerful.
The other thing I think it elevates, too, is pragmatism and trying to figure out what was actually going to resonate with people. Marshall, tell us a little bit about where Bill Hybels was getting his training and his ideas for this, and also his conviction to kind of go against the grain when it came to how to operate a church.
Well, you're asking me a question. I don't know if I can answer that, because I'm not sure who all of the influential voices in his life were, but I know Gilbert Bilezikian, who is a theologian who was associated with Trinity and with Wheaton College. Dr. B, as he was known, became very influential in Bill's life, and his primary message was that the gospel is alive. It's not something that you pull out of a can that has been preserved from the first century, but it's something living, and it needs to be presented as a living, growing reality. That resonated with what Willow Creek was about. They wanted to present a living faith, not something that was influenced more by tradition than by the effect it would have on people.
I think a key verse that Bilezikian and Hybels latched onto early on, and you can correct me if you think if I've got this, but they really love the Acts chapter 2, verse 46 as a model of how they wanted the church to be. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and they ate food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of the people, and the Lord added to their number of those who are being saved.
And I think, another passage that was certainly there was the parable of the pounds, or the parable of the talents, where Jesus basically condemns the one who took the talent that had been given and buried it, to protect it for the future, and did not take a risk and invest it in something that would bring back a hundredfold. I've been at a number of gatherings of pastors who have followed the Willow Creek approach, and that parable is used a lot. You know, I just want to hear the words, you know, "Well done, good and faithful servant," which of course is the words of the master to the faithful servants who invested their talents and did not just try to preserve them. And so they are risk takers, and certainly Willow Creek was a risk taking. They felt that faith involved taking risks in order to receive the return. And you know, that was a different cultural vibe than you got in most churches of that time.
This episode is brought to you in part by Leighton Ford Ministries, cultivating healthy leaders and thriving ministries. Do you find the constantly changing world and constantly changing church increasingly hard to navigate? What if we told you the best thing to do right now is to stop and listen? In their book, Attentive Church Leadership, Kevin Ford and Jim Singleton call for attentive churches with attentive leaders who can discern cultural and organizational change and pivot accordingly. Healthy transformation starts with a posture of attention. Learn to see what God is already doing in your midst, in your own soul, in your people, and in the communities and culture around you. As you practice habits of attention, God will lead you through the highs and lows of change into the exciting adventure of being on mission with Him. Attentive Church Leadership is available on Amazon or wherever you prefer to buy books.
This episode of Quick to Listen is brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible, a translation that is both faithful to the original languages and really easy to read. Today, we are talking with Rachel Myers, who is the founder and CEO of She Reads Truth. Rachel, it is great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
She Reads Truth started out with an app, but you guys also now have a Christian Standard Bible, a translation physical Bible. What was behind the idea of actually creating a physical version?
I have always been an analog girl. I love being able to carry my Bible, to pick it up. I love the intentionality of seeing it and turning the pages. I like knowing where books of the Bible are when I turn to them. I like knowing and remembering where on the page is that verse that I read 2 weeks ago and being able to find it in that corner of the page. Beyond that, one of the lines in She Reads Truth's vision statement is we create beautiful, accessible Bible reading plans using old and new technology. So while we do have the app and it's awesome, we think that we should never advance in technology and forget where we've come from and forget the awesome tangibility of an analog Bible in your hands.
You can learn more about the Christian Standard Bible at csbible.com/CT.
My understanding is Bill's father was a fairly successful businessman. So I'm assuming some of that business savvy was part of his DNA, because a lot of what he did in his church was reminiscent of how corporations. In fact, I seem to recall back in the day that he looked up to McDonald's in the early years about how to go about creating a church culture that would be attractive to people.
Well, I think it'd be accurate to say that there was a sacred impatience. There was a frustration that the church was content not to speak the language of business, not to speak the language of the marketplace, not to speak the language of most people who were not thoroughly churched already. And you know, he wanted to be able to reach people who hadn't already been reached.
What is the Willow Creek Association, Marshall?
Well, the Willow Creek Association was simply a group of like-minded churches, and it was sort of an indication of how much reach the Willow Creek had. Willow Creek did not, you know, form a denomination. It was an independent church, but it was influential. It was being effective in reaching its neighborhood. And Willow Creek, I think, probably the first, you know, embryonic indication of its extended influence was through publishing. You know, a number of the staff there, Judson Poling, Don Cousins, Bill Hybels, were writing books that were being read, you know, widely and benefiting other congregations. And so I think it was in 1992 that the Willow Creek Association was formed, and it quickly rose to almost 13,000 congregations that were part of the association. And it was not an institution. It was simply a network of like-minded churches. And they would resource one another. They would be able to share ideas, stories of, you know, things that had worked, things that had not worked. And so it was simply a leadership network to extend and support the vision of effective outreach to an unchurched unchurched world.
And it still exists, correct?
It still exists, yes, indeed. In fact, later this week, the Willow Creek Association hosts, it's now known primarily for the conference that it sponsors called the Global Leadership Summit, which in a lot of ways has eclipsed, you know, the Willow Creek Church in terms of its reach and influence globally. But I think this year they're planning to have over 700 sites in 130 countries, and which is just a phenomenal. There, no other leadership conference in the world has that kind of reach. I attended one a few years ago down in Managua, Nicaragua, and you know, sitting surrounded by Nicaraguan church leaders who came to listen to. In most cases, it was translations of presentations that had been delivered at South Barrington, but they also did have one or two Nicaraguan speakers who were giving leadership talks there in Managua in Spanish. And so this has been a, you know, very important conference for highlighting the importance of leadership. And I guess that would have to be one of the other things that Willow Creek has really emphasized, the importance of the leadership gift, recognizing that, as Willow Creek often says, everything rises and falls with leadership, that it's that had sort of been downplayed in previous generations, emphasizing sort of the congregation as a whole being the means of grace or the means of outreach. And Willow Creek was unabashedly saying, well, you know, congregations can drift. It takes a leader to interrupt drift and cause a group to go from here to there, and there meaning you know, where the group is called to go and to accomplish its purpose.
Yeah, I do want to talk about this conference for a second. You talked about it being really important for church leaders, but one of the interesting things about this conference is that it seems to pull people who are not necessarily just all evangelical rock stars, but looks to the secular world for leadership as well. Can you talk about some of the controversies that have surrounded it over the years?
Well, you're absolutely right. The Global Leadership Summit over the years has emphasized leadership, not necessarily Christian leadership. Leadership has become a discipline in its own right. It is now taught in schools, including, you know, Denver Seminary, where I teach, but it's taught in secular schools. There are courses in leadership development. There's courses in leadership itself. And so the Global Leadership Summit, you know, definitely embraced a wide understanding of leadership. And so speakers would come from the business world. You know, they had Jack Welch from GE. They had Colin Powell from the State Department or from the military. They had Norman Schwarzkopf, you know, the general of Desert Storm. They had the most controversial one was when they invited former President Bill Clinton to come and speak. And of course, President Clinton was one that many Christians, particularly conservative Christians, really thought was one of the worst presidents of all time, and considered him an immoral and incompetent leader. But he was invited to the Global Leadership Summit to speak on leadership. That was costly in terms of you know, a lot of people considering that that was a bridge too far. That was a step too far in reaching out to secular leadership voices. But the summit did survive that and continued to grow even after that that experience.
Yeah, and I just wanted to give people a little bit of an update on what the fallout of this Hybels actions have been. Apparently this year, 111 host sites for the Global Leadership Summit have canceled, and 67 of those sites were ones that had hosted the summit in the past, and the rest were sites that were going to be hosting for the first time. So there has been some fallout with regards to all of that happening. Marshall, in recent years, Willow Creek has become more egalitarian. They let women serve as pastors and preach from the pulpit. In fact, we mentioned earlier that Hybels had named two different heirs to succeed him, and that one of them had resigned. The one that is still on is the new executive pastor, and her name is Heather Larson. She is kind of a result of this heritage that they have. Willow also started getting more involved in social justice. That's especially true with regards to race and the Israel-Palestine conflict. How did all of these changes affect its reputation among evangelical churches?
All of these are an example of Willow Creek trying to demonstrate effective leadership in the context in which it's placed. Leadership means, Max DePree, who was a former board member at Fuller Seminary and the CEO of Herman Miller Furniture Company, put it very well. He said, "The first task of a leader is to define reality." And that reality means, defining reality means, you know, understanding the situation we are currently in, and then the reality of where does God want us to go? What's the next step for our organization? What should we be investing in? That, I think, is what Willow Creek was doing when they were saying, okay, what's the situation we are in now, and what is God calling us to do to effectively communicate and to demonstrate the gospel? Very early on, Willow Creek did not use biblical language for its government structure. You know, it didn't have elders or deacons. It had a board, and board members. As would be true in many businesses, board members were drawn from both men and women. They had women as teaching pastors. Recognizing their gifts and invited them to serve. And so I think Willow Creek would say that's how we are trying to live out the gospel rather than simply following the forms. We are trying to embody the functions of the gospel, not just sticking to the language and to the forms of the past. So getting involved in social justice, yes, they had what they call the Justice Journey that went down to Selma, along with prominent African American congregation in Chicago, Salem Baptist. Willow Creek and Salem Baptist had joint trips down there to Selma to be able to walk in the footsteps of some of the civil rights leaders and some of the civil rights movement. They've been working to try to bring about racial reconciliation in a number of ways. More recently, working with Telos, which is an organization that has the motto pro-Israel, pro-Palestine, pro-peace, trying to find ways for Palestinians and Israelis to live at peace with one another. You know, it's unusual for a church the size of Willow to take on some of these major social challenges, but they have been involved in that, and credit that back to the sense of what leadership is about, trying to bring the focus of the church onto what is most strategic, most needed in today's context.
Bill Hybels was very teachable when he was shown that something was seriously wrong with the way they were doing church, or there are many examples of that. But I remember sitting in a leadership forum panel to talk about racial reconciliation in the church. But when I asked them a question, so we all recognize this as a problem of churches having a hard time integrating people of other cultures into their church. What do you think we can do about it? He actually had like a 7-point plan he was going to put into effect, or is already putting into effect, on how to make his congregation more multiracial and multiethnic. So that's the way he thought and the way he acted. So when he decided something needed to be done, it wasn't just a pie-in-the-sky dream. It was something he had a gift for, saying that these are the 7 steps we're going to take to get there.
Is it fair to consider Bill Hybels the driver behind all of these initiatives?
Everything comes down to leadership. And so in one sense, the founding pastor and the ongoing pastor is primarily responsible for that. That said, all the good ideas didn't originate in one person's mind. You know, one of the tasks of leadership is to gather other strong leaders. And I think over the years, Willow has been able to attract other strong leaders to take responsibility for various things, including the Willow Creek Association, including some of the ministries, Promised Land, which was their children's ministry, which has taken, took on a life of its own. Some of these other social justice ministries, the cars ministry, where people donate used cars and get them fixed up and they give them to single moms. There are lots of major enterprises that are under the Willow Creek umbrella that have required excellent leadership at a number of levels. So I would say, is one person the driver for all of those? No. But certainly Bill Hybels has been very influential in creating that culture that allows those forms of leadership to thrive.
So as we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, even before these allegations broke, Hybels had been planning to retire this fall. But obviously the retirement of someone can almost feel like a celebration and a passing of the baton versus kind of the disgrace that is accompanying this entire situation right now. Notably, Scott McKnight, who is an author and blogger and professor of New Testament at Northern Seminary, who has attended this church for a number of years. I don't think he attends it now, though. He wrote this on his blog yesterday, which is, "What I do know is this: Bill Hybels and Willow Creek's leadership have undone 40 years of trust for many." And I'm wondering, you know, Marshall, you've seen your fair share of ministry letdowns and betrayals and of leaders, you know, not necessarily living out the integrity that they had preached. What do you think of Scott's remarks and of where trust is going to be for many Christians towards Willow Creek and the various ministries that it's launched and expanded?
He may be right, but I hope he's wrong. As you mentioned, I've been long enough. I saw the Jim Baker televangelist scandals back in the 80s, and PTL Ministries was a huge, hugely influential, particularly on television. And when Jim Baker fell, the whole thing tumbled, and PTL does not exist today. So it's possible for ministries, because of the sins of the leader, to completely collapse. I don't think that's going to completely be the case in the case of Willow Creek. You know, certainly it's going through a very difficult, painful, and humiliating time. Now there's issues of justice that need to, justice to the victims of some of this misbehavior just have to be addressed. I heard somebody say today that love in public is called justice. And so we need some of that public love to be exercised here. And so I don't know how all that is going to affect the institution of Willow Creek, but I do know that Willow Creek's influence goes beyond the institution. Even if Willow Creek suffers, I don't think the actions here have undone the 40 years of extended influence. All of the 13,000 churches in the Willow Creek Association are not going to go away because of the sins of one man. The church is going to survive. The church, Big C, is going to survive. And I think Willow Creek's influence has been a positive thing on these 13,000 churches and the multiplied hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people that have been benefited as a result of these user-friendly, seeker-sensitive churches that have sprouted up around the world as a result. So, one institution may be, the foundations may be shaken at this point, but the effect of this church is going to continue on, and it's been a very positive thing for the kingdom.
It is fascinating, right, how we can even be asking this question of, if a 40-year institution can make it because of the actions of one person, right? I mean, that's kind of goes back to the importance that is placed on leadership and how all of that works for better or for worse.
Right. Yeah, we've seen other churches similarly. After Robert Schuller stepped down, there was real conflict. The Crystal Cathedral had to sell its campus, and it's now owned by the Archdiocese of the Catholic Archdiocese, and a Hispanic church is meeting there currently. I think that the fact that the Crystal Cathedral's foundations were shaken doesn't mean that the church is going to go away. It may take on different forms, but the gospel is going to continue to be proclaimed and demonstrated, and that's one thing we have the assurance of Scripture on, that I will be with you till the end of the age, Jesus said, and it may not be in a particular institutional form, but it's the gospel is going to continue to be embodied.
Well, thank you, Marshall, for all of that really great history and information. If you would like to give us feedback about all of this or point out gently anything that we missed or didn't get into enough, you can do that by going to podcast@christianitytoday.com and sending us an email. You can also go on Twitter. We're at CT Podcasts. All right, now is the time of the show that we call Precious Moments, which is when everyone gets to share something that's brought them joy in the past week. All yours, Mark.
Okay. Well, I went to a talk this week on John Paul II's Theology of the Body. It was given at a small group in a local bar of all places. But again, it was one of those talks that is formally philosophical and theological in nature, because John Paul's writings on that are impenetrable, frankly. They're very hard to understand just reading them, but there have been a lot of interpreters of that over the years. We've written a few articles in CT about it. Matthew Anderson has written a book, one of our CT colleagues, in the sense of he's a fan of ours and we're a fan of his stuff, has written a book on it. But this was a presentation by a man who gives talks about this, especially to young people, especially to high schoolers, to help them understand God's overarching plan for the world and how it's very bodily and it manifests itself in our bodies, in our world, very tangible. And it was just one of those talks that the way he did it and the stories he told and the way he integrated it with scripture, it just made you, he kept on framing it as a love story between God and humankind, and then using various and sundry stories to emphasize that. It was just very powerful.
Isn't it cool when someone shares something about something you thought you know about, but in a different way, and you just hear it differently?
Yeah, it's really good.
Mark, where can people find you?
I publish something called the Galley Report, or CT publishes it. I just write it up. It's a newsletter that goes out weekly, and I link to stories I find interesting, and I comment on them. And you can find that at christianitytoday.com/thegalleyreport. That's G-A-L-L-I, not E-Y.
Marshall, you ready?
Oh, absolutely. Well, when you work with 100 doctoral students, I find great joy in that. My job at Denver Seminary is helping students with their research projects and their doctoral theses, as well as recruiting students for the program. So in both of those areas, I had a source of joy this week. One of our students came in. He's the pastor at a church not far from Denver. And his doctoral thesis is going to be on, can the sins of the past affect the present and the future of the congregation? And he had discovered that the Ku Klux Klan back in the 1940s had been a big supporter of his congregation. And he's doing research now on the various ways that the Klan's influence has continued to affect the church. And he's determined to help repent and to free the church from the bondage of some of the sins of the past. And I just wanted to commend him, and I just drew great joy from the courage and from the wisdom that he's exhibiting as he approaches that. At the same time, I got a call just yesterday from an African-American pastor who spent 20 years in the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps sent him to Africa, and when he got out of the Marine Corps, he joined the Peace Corps. And as a member of the Peace Corps, he planted churches in Congo and in South Africa, and now he's coming back and wanting to do doctoral work to help equip him for his ministry of overseeing these churches in an African context. And I'm thinking, my goodness, if I can work with a former Marine and a Peace Corps worker to help equip him to do apostolic work in Africa, that is a joy.
I'm like excited by your precious moments. Both of those are so interesting. Thank you for sharing those. Marshall, do you have a website? Are you on Twitter? Where can people find you?
I do not have a website or Twitter, but I can be reached at marshall.shelley@denverseminary.edu, and I would be happy to interact with anybody who's listened to this podcast.
All right. My precious moment is not necessarily on the more joyful end, but I am reading a book that may be familiar to both of you guys called Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. It is one of the best books. Most people who listen to this podcast know that I'm only reading books by or about Native Americans this year. And this book has probably the most amount of, I don't know, say primary sources from the Native Americans themselves. There's just a lot of quotes from them that you get to hear them talking about the conflict in their own terms. It basically covers 1860 to the end of the 19th century in America, and it's very centered on the perspectives of the indigenous people as they were interacting with different parts of the military, many of them kind of like left over from the Civil War who were fighting them. Anyway, it's just incredibly fascinating. I really enjoy the writing, and I can't really say that I enjoy the book because it's incredibly harrowing and there's already been multiple massacres to contend with, but I really do appreciate learning this history and am glad to have picked up this book. All right, people can find me on Twitter at MEPAYNL. that is it for us this week. Thank you for listening to another episode of Quick to Listen. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, which is where we ask that you rate and review the show. Thank you to everyone who has done that. But we are also available almost everywhere else where you get your podcasts if you'd prefer to listen to us there as well. As a reminder, if you want to support the podcast, you can do so by going to morect.com/podcast. That's morect.com/podcast. And this podcast is produced by myself, Cray Allred, and Richard Clark. We will see you all next week.